diamond ring. All I want is the right to live, mister. Give me back my job again.
Now I don't want your Rolls Royce, mister. I don't want your pleasure yacht. All I want's just food for my baby. Give to me my old job back.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. How are you? Welcome to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank. On this episode, episode 90, I believe, I talked to my friend Tom Brady about, not that Tom Brady, about, he's an economist, and we talk about the economy and the recession and the bailouts. He's one of the people I really wanted to talk to about this stuff, because he really knows about it. He was a little worried that it was kind of boring, that he wouldn't be able to explain it in a fun way, but I thought it was pretty interesting while we were talking. So I'll let you decide for yourself. Let me do some housekeeping before we start. I just like to say that I am filming my special, my comedy special, in Brooklyn, New York, December 28th at the Knitting Factory. I've got two shows. It's a Friday. I've got a show at 7 o'clock and a show at 9 o'clock. So go on. You can get on my website, arithegreat.com. You can get tickets, or you can go to the Knitting Factory and get tickets there. I'm really excited. It should be rad. So it's a small room. I wanted to mimic the, I hate those fucking horrible Comedy Central specials that they seem so grand and like big and bright. They just look lame. So I want to more mimic the idea of what comedy is normally day to day. So, it should be really cool. So please get tickets. And then what else do I have? My next storyteller show is December 18th. It is, holidays. With a Z-E, or maybe Home for the Holidays. I don't know, but it's all holiday stories. No lineup yet. Kyle Kinane is in, actually. It's me, Kyle Kinane, and then four other people that I haven't booked yet. And I'm editing the celebrity stories one. It's hard to edit, so it should be out this week or maybe next week on iTunes. And that's it, you guys. I guess I have some January dates. I'll be in Edmonton the 16th through the 20th. And Chicago with Joe Rogan on the 25th. Is that it? Yeah, I guess so. Oh, and then I'm doing a live Punch Drunk. Punch Drunk is my other podcast that I do with Sam Tripoli and Jason Tebow. It's as much as this one is serious, that one is silly. So we talk a little bit about sports. We say like 20-25% sports, and the rest is just us being fools. So tune into that. It's every Tuesday we do it live. Right now on the Toad Hop Network. So check it out. Every Tuesday from 12 to 2. It's on www.toadhopnetwork.com/live, 12 to 2 Pacific time. We do it. All right, so that's it. I guess I should talk one sponsor. It's Christmas time coming up, so let's do Amazon. If you guys are – oh, by the way, I got a fucking delivery from Sherry's Berries. I think they're going to be my new sponsor because they were so fucking delicious. But they haven't contacted me about it or anything yet. I wonder if I got them or not. Well, they'll cut to me eventually. But until then, fucking, they were delicious. Let's do Amazon.com. So if you're shopping for Christmas presents, or as my dad would call them, Krachschmier presents, because he refuses to say the word Christ, go to my web. If you go to Amazon.com, everything's cheaper on Amazon, and there's no taxes. So if you go to my website, there's a link for Amazon on the right-hand side. There's an Amazon.com and there's an Amazon.ca. The CA one's on the right. That's just for Canada. The Amazon.com one is for America. And if you click on that, it takes you to Amazon. And then you can just do all your regular shopping as is. But if you go through my website, arithegreat.com, then they give me credit for your purchases. They give me like 5 or 6% back. So whatever Christmas shopping you're doing on Amazon, please go to my website first. And if you forget, because I forget sometimes too, try to bookmark my website, arithegreat.com, and then bookmark it as Amazon so you just remember to go there. Every time. So, thank you, everybody. If you're also going to send flowers this holiday season, proflowers.com is a sponsor of mine. If you go to my website, there's a link. Or you can go to proflowers.com and click on the microphone in the top right-hand corner. And then type in skeptic. But it's probably easier just to go to my website. They have cheap deals. You can get like percentages off, and they have like $20 bouquets and stuff through my site. Just go through there, and then everything, same thing like Amazon, just registers through my site. That's the way you can support this podcast. And also, within the next week or two, I will have my physical CD out. So check back to my website or on Twitter to see when it's out. So, is we ready? Oh, and also you can get like t-shirts and shit. I have my 2012 tour shirt. Is the last supplies are there. So if you want one, go get one. They're pretty fucking rad designs. If you haven't seen it, it's pretty fucking sweet. This artist, Ted Park, did it. It's just the right color. It's just a shirt I would wear. It's just fucking cool. So check that out. All right, you guys, are we ready to start? Let's do it. Are there any other announcements? I think not. So here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, episode 90. And of course, I can't think of a name, like I always can't. Something with banks or fucking recession. I don't know. God damn it, Ari. Think of something before you start recording. And by the way, I'm still looking for a t-shirt design for 2013. So if there's any artists out there and you can make a cool t-shirt design, it doesn't have to have my head in it. In fact, I almost prefer that it wouldn't have my head in it. But whatever you guys want to do, some cool design that I can sell as a t-shirt for 2013. I like the idea of one shirt per year. So, and whoever wins, whoever gets the one that I like the most, I'll give you $500. I figure that's fair. So, here we go. Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, episode 90. Banks suck with Tom Brady. Oh, and send those submissions for t-shirts to my website, contact@arithegreat.com. All right, here we go. I hate banks, just can't stand them. Give me a shovel and man, I plant them. 6 feet under, that's where they belong. I hate banks, is moving the song. Big, I ride myself one or two. I hate banks, yeah, how about you? Ooh. Now let me tell you something else. Right, we'll figure out where we're going to go, which direction. Hi, how are you?
I'm great.
I do the intros later. Have you ever heard this podcast?
I have. Listened to it.
I do the intros later, but... all right, well, thanks for talking to me. Tom Brady.
Yes, thank you.
I appreciate it.
Just to make it clear, I am not that Tom Brady.
Yeah, do you get that a lot?
Yes, yeah, obviously.
All the time.
I'm just thankful I don't live in New England, in Boston.
Oh, yeah, that'd be way worse.
Yeah, I think there's even a commercial running where someone in Chicago happens to be named Michael Jordan, and pizza delivery guys show up to his house with cameras ready to go, and then it's another guy named Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
And they're always just disappointed.
My friends that I went to yeshiva with, the ones from Chicago... Mm-hmm. One of them, Joel Gerstein, they used to know where Jordan lived.
And would they just drive by his house?
And steal mail. steal a bill or something that they could have.
That seems worth the risk.
Yeah. Isn't that a huge felony or something to steal mail?
Yeah, I don't think it's frowned upon.
That seems like way too harsh a penalty.
For stealing mail?
Yeah. Like whatever it is, where they're like, it's super, super illegal.
Just because nothing in the mail is actually important anymore?
Yeah. Maybe that's what it is. Yeah. Or what? It's a letter from your mom?
Right, yeah. With $5 in it from his grandmother.
You're going to go to jail for taking someone's letter from your mom?
Yeah.
That's the worst thing. It's probably just a bill, which doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, I mean, he may really want to order something from Restoration Hardware.
Yeah.
That catalog is not going to come. And I don't know what Michael Jordan, I don't know what else he would do.
People used to always say that. You can't even open somebody else's mail. It's like you're living with somebody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or destroy a penny, which is also no way.
Destroying a penalty, they have those like... You know, those gear things at museums and stuff where
you think they would come down on them.
No, they always say we have a special exemption for this device.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It is a federal offense to destroy.
Really?
Yeah.
I cut a penny in half once when I was
Hold on. I gotta call 911. Hang on a second.
It took me forever. I had to get those heavy duty scissors and really keep working it.
And you can do that.
Like
there's
week.
Yeah, lots of I think they want to prevent people from melting them down and getting the like silver out of dimes
silver?
And quarters.
Oh,
well,
yeah, yeah.
pre-1965, they have...
Because it would be worth more than a... Than
yeah, significant... Well, even the pennies today, which are no longer precious metals, they're copper-plated. But like even that, it costs... It doesn't have more in precious metal, but it costs the government more to make a penny than 1 cent. And more... And a nickel the
Why
same.
Why would they still be doing it?
because
why are we so wasteful?
That's the penny lobby. It's tough. No, it is. It's silly. It's something that is antiquated and something we can't seem to get rid of.
There's a thing. I feel like I've heard this, that some congressmen, there's like two sides and they're trying to push, like, get rid of the penny, and the other side's like, no, we need the penny.
Yeah, and the people who are saying we need the penny have nothing. Like, there's no reasonable argument to be
made. They just like it around.
They just like it. They think it, people will... The argument is, which is baloney, is that stores will round up to the nearest nickel and everything will suddenly cost people...
4 cents.
An extra...
Up to 4 cents more.
Some percentage, right. Some percentage more. Now, if you're buying a car and you have to round up to the next nickel, I don't think it's a big deal.
Right. No matter what it is.
I'm saying it's not a reasonable argument. Right. Nonsense.
They're going to kill us. Yeah. They're going to get us.
Yeah. No, but there is silver in older dimes and quarters and half dollars and silver dollars, obviously. But
those old nickels, it seems like there is.
Old nickels, and they don't have the silver. That was nickel. But they... the dimes and quarters, if you get your hands on pre-1965 dimes and quarters, it's worth it to hang on to for the someday when you can
melt
possibly,
it down.
Yeah, when you can either just give it to a coin dealer and they'll give you more than the dime or quarter for it. I mean, it doesn't sound like
worth holding on to.
Well, you could
for 25 years.
Well, you can probably sell them now. It's questionably legal.
Me and Aaron Levine saved up cans once.
Uh-huh.
When we were living together,
yeah,
we were like, let's sell these back and get some cash. And we did it for like 3 months. And we filled up like two cabinets. Like both of those things would be filled with cans. And it was like $1.60.
Yeah, not worth it.
And we're like, yeah, I'm out.
Yeah.
So let's talk about banking or the economy or all that junk, Chaz. Because you know more about that. You do a good job of explaining it sometimes.
All right.
Where should we start?
Well, I think I think people have a misconception about what banks are and what they maybe should be. I think the one way to think about a bank and how it began is more like a warehouse for your money.
So
if you had 8 chairs and you didn't need them or you didn't have room for them for 6 months, you would deliver them to a warehouse and you would pay them some fee to hold on to them, and they would be, and you would get an IOU.
That's how banks were in the Old West,
right?
Like, we'll watch your money, from robbers, even though they never did.
It seems like they were getting robbed a lot.
Yeah.
and the warehouse would give you an IOU saying we owe you these 8 chairs, and if it's kind of a different thought with banks, because it's a little bit different because money is not, you don't have to go get those exact same chairs back.
Uh-huh.
But what happens is, and if in the warehouse scenario,
you just have the amount.
Yeah. In the warehouse situation, you would have these, like, some specific good, and you would have the IOU. And what would be interesting, what you can do with an IOU, if the warehouse had a good reputation for having good security and they're believable.
Oh, yeah. This is how you find it the first time.
You can then take that IOU and transfer it to somebody else who might want the chairs, or you can use it as collateral.
Because they were like, hey, I got these 8 chairs. Like, how do I know if I don't see them? It's like, because here's a bank note.
Right. And it's
we can trust the bank.
Exactly. Exactly. But what would clearly be illegal, immoral, and would create a problem in the warehouse situation is if the bank were to say, okay, this guy, he has his IOU for the chairs, but I don't think he's going to pick them up for another 6 months.
Yeah.
So I'm going to
rent them out.
I'm going to give someone else an IOU for 8 chairs that they can use for collateral. They can raise money.
How are you going to give it to someone else?
Well, that's right. You can't.
Well, why would they just give it to someone else?
They would manufacture a new IOU for 8 chairs, and they would
sell it to the other person or something.
Well, they would give it. Then they could use it as collateral. They could use it to complete a transaction. The bank could give them that IOU and say, "We need you to return this. We know you need to trade this promise of 8 chairs. We need you need to trade it in for your rent."
Right.
And you say that in 6 months you're going to be able to give me that IOU back because your job will come through, or some, it's nonsensical with a warehouse, with chairs, because you have two IOUs out for the same eight chairs.
Wait, why would you give out the second IOU? I'm trying to get the analogy down.
Because the bank can make money off it.
Okay, that's it.
Right. The guy will pay them some amount for that loan, which they can...
Oh, that's what it is. Okay.
Right. So when you put it in the context of an actual bank and money, if a depositor puts $1,000 in his bank account, he gets an IOU from the bank that he can come get his $1,000 whenever he wants.
Right. But he told them 6 months. In the meantime, they're like using it.
Right.
Yeah.
And... But then the bank has $1,000 in its vault.
Yeah.
And it's not breaking the law. It is well within their rights
to loan out that $1,000.
To loan out that $1,000.
Invest it. Do whatever they want with it.
Give it to some. Yeah. To loan it to someone to buy a house, to do something else. Even though,
and if the person wants that money,
they then have no money in their vault.
Okay. Now that works. I like that. But that works on a smaller level. But when you have, let's just say, Citibank or Bank of America,
yeah,
and you have well over 100 people banking there,
yes,
you can give some of it out and be like, well, there'll be no rush on this money. I still have some cash on me.
Right. They are playing the odds that their fraud doesn't
And then not everybody caught. Won't come in and say, give us...
Yeah, and it's legal. But it's still giving two IOUs to two different people for the same cash.
Oh.
It's...
Right.
It's still the same fraud. It's just, in this case, it's legal. Because it's been reviewed by judges and by courts, and they have said that deposits in the bank are not treated like a warehouse. It's the bank's money to do with as they see fit, even though the bank has, you know, Bank of America has billions and billions of dollars in bonds and CDs and other things that are investments in the bank with which they can fully do.
That's why they're giving out 2% for a CD.
Right.
But they're like, no, we'll make plenty more than 2%.
Right. It's kind of puzzling that if you... So your checking account, when you do deposit money in your checking account,
yeah,
you're the one getting the benefit from it. Not you should be.
Interest.
Well, no, not interest.
Oh, the ability to use checks?
By putting the money in the bank, they are promising to safeguard it. They're promising to give you the ability to access it electronically, access it through ATMs, write checks with it. These
That's
are all
kinda like...
services provided to you by the bank.
Yeah.
And that's why it's a little bit weird that you're also expected to get interest, because they're the ones providing you the service. I think
you should be paying them.
I think most people don't fully understand that their checking accounts, maybe they know, maybe they don't.
Is what?
Is not there.
Is not there?
The money isn't there. The checking account, if everyone went, it's what, you know, you...
It's a beautiful life, right?
A wonderful life. A wonderful life. Exactly. Everybody went to get their...
And he's like,
money
I don't
back.
Have
yeah,
all that.
Yeah, his words were, this isn't how it works.
That's what he said in the movie?
Yeah. And he's right. It's not how it works, because they all commit fraud. It's just...
Who all commits? Oh, all the banks.
Yeah, because they... because it's legal and because they are allowed to do with it what they want, but it's... I don't think people really, really know that it's not there.
Hold on. I'm trying to still get the analogy with the chairs. If I gave the bank eight chairs...
And this analogy is not my own. This is from a book written called The Case Against the Fed by Murray Rothbard. It's a...
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know if he used chairs, but the warehouse.
True. But, so if I give them eight chairs, and then you starting a business, you need eight chairs, why would they give you an IOU? They would give you the eight chairs, right?
No, it's they just write an IOU...
To this new guy who want...
Yeah, who says... And
why would somebody else want an IOU from the bank?
So that they can then sell that IOU to somebody else. They can raise money. They can pay their rent. They can say to their landlord,
hey,
I don't have the money for rent, but here is this IOU. Here is this collateral.
Collateral.
And if I don't pay you, you
then
can
you'll
keep
get
the
it.
IOU.
There oh, are I get
still...
It.
And again, it's something that you can still transact with,
And then the problem is, okay, let's say he doesn't pay the rent. Then the homeowner, the landlord would say, okay, well, I want the 8 chairs.
Right.
The bank would be like, okay, here. And then the first guy says, I want my chairs back. And he's right. like, oh, I don't.
And that's why
I don't have. And then the bank would only be.
The banking system has a lot of problems.
But the bank would have to
start defaulting on loans.
The bank would have to sue that dude.
Yeah.
Who didn't pay his rent? Then he'd be like, "Well, I can't give you the 8 chairs. I don't have the money. So what do you want from me?"
Exactly.
You can try. I'll pay you one chair back.
Yep.
Like a year, and the other guy's like, "No, I need those chairs. I'm having a family function."
Right. Or if the guy says, "I'm filing for bankruptcy. I don't have any assets."
So why? Oh, so that's what'll happen then. I was going to say, why haven't we just got complete like? Chaos. Why have it become like a wonderful life?
We almost did.
So wait. So then. Okay, I'm trying to think how it would relate to.
So what? This. What could happen? How it used to work is the checking accounts, the deposits are 100% safeguarded. They cannot be lent out. But the bank has equity. It has people who are buying its stock or buying shares in it, or it has loans when people buy bonds of the banks, and that money is at the bank's discretion to do with it what it will. Make loans, give mortgages, make loans to growing businesses or people trying to start their business.
Yeah.
But the key thing is that that money that goes into the bank, those are investors. Those are people giving money to the bank because they want to make interest from the bank. They know what they're doing. They know why they're giving it to the bank, and they're giving it to the bank to make a profit off the bank.
Right.
They're saying, I have this extra money. I don't know a small business. I don't have the capacity to judge if
something.
A small business is a quality plan. So I'm going to buy a bond in Bank of America with the thought that they know better than I do.
It's like
what
U.S.
banks
bonds.
Are growing.
You're just giving the money to the government and saying,
I
trust you won't be out of business soon.
Exactly. With a bank, it's a little bit more you are trusting that you're investing in that bank because they are the people who small businesses might come to who are looking for money.
Right.
And so they make 8% on the loan, and the bond that you gave them makes 6%, and the bank makes its spread, and you make
so
more
you're like,
than you would have otherwise.
So you're like, hey, bank, go find these people that need loans, get the interest.
Right.
And so
but the key thing
that works
is,
when they're not falsifying documents and saying.
When they're not lending out checking accounts, because checking accounts remain an IOU to the depositor.
Yeah. I can write you a check for $100. I still have, if I have $1,000 in there, I still have $900.
Right. Or you can go withdraw all the cash.
Right.
Savings account
and checking is
could
the same.
Be murky. It's, yeah, I would say I would lump it in with checking account.
Okay.
Savings account, I think people do expect, it's more of a, you're giving it just for safeguarding, I would say more than the checking account. And you,
you don't need
expect
to
that you can, you know, they might have limitations on what the bank can then do with it. But the key thing is that if the bank as a whole goes bankrupt, goes out of business, all the money that's in the checking account should still be there. If we had
100%, they never were allowed to spend it.
They shouldn't be allowed to spend it. It's called fractional reserve lending, where the bank is only required to keep a fraction
of
those checking accounts, and that's some calculation of how much is likely to be needed at any one time by people withdrawing money or over a short period of time. But it gives them the right to make loans from money and have multiple IOUs out on the same deposits.
But it's really not the same deposit. It's an IOU from just a pool of deposits.
It's a pool of
gigantic
deposits,
pool.
But each person who deposited that money holds an IOU for the full amount.
Right.
The bank then goes and loans it to somebody else. So the cash is no longer there, and someone else is. Again, it's fine with loans.
And that's what a check is. When I write a check to you, and you go deposit it in your checking account, they talk to my bank and say, "Okay, we're calling in the IOU.
Yeah,
give us that money."
Right, right. Right, exactly. But if the bank ever goes bankrupt, they have all the equity can be completely eliminated. All the money from the bonds can be completely eliminated.
What do you mean eliminated? Not pay them back?
Yeah.
Because they're out of business.
Because if...
So invested in the business, the business failed, you lost your money.
If the bank did take risky loans, take risk in bad businesses, those didn't pay off, they didn't get anything back. Once the equity portion, the stock, is wiped out, that's considered insolvent, and then it's...
Then the checkings. Then they take it out of
checking,
that.
Well, I would say shouldn't be touched. It should be 100%. But the FDIC, we have the FDIC to ensure that the money that's in the checking account up to a certain limit, $250,000 now.
It used to be $100,000, right?
It used to be, yeah. They upped it in the financial crisis.
Oh, really? Yeah. So because people are like, I can't leave this money in there. The bank's going to go out of business.
Exactly. And that's the thing. If people start depositing, if people begin to withdraw the money they're actually owed, it creates a problem, which...
Right. They all do it. And once you start saying, like, hey, the bank's not going to have money, then it's like, oh, I better get my money right now.
Right. Which is like everybody going to the warehouse who wants their chairs back.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the warehouse says we can't do that because we've written multiple IOUs on those same chairs.
Wow.
And that's where it gets fucked up.
And then they also started writing IOUs to people that are like at first they'd be like, okay, well, I don't know. Bill Gates wants an IOU. Like, he's good for it.
Right.
I know he's good for it.
Yeah.
But then if some schmuck wants one, they should be like, well, I can't trust you to pay us back. But then they just start saying, let's just trust him.
Yeah, and again, I don't have any, you know, they should be able to make their own decisions as long as it's from the right pool of money.
Who should be able to make their own decisions?
The banks.
Uh-huh.
Should be able to, they can, you know, and they get different interest rates based on the risk. That's where they...
And so then the savings and checking and savings, they should just treat as a warehouse, you know, like just hold it. Like
at least the checking. I would say the savings, they could offer depositors a nominal interest rate and say, but just make it explicit. We are taking risk with this money.
Right.
But you can then do it in very short-term, high-quality.
Bank just seems like 100%, like, yeah, my money's in the bank.
Right.
That's a saying. It's like money in the bank. It's like so safe.
Right. But yeah, that's...
Oh, yeah, they gotta stop using that saying.
Yeah, or have it mean something different.
It's like money under your mattress.
It's
always gonna be there.
It's like a Tony Romo pass. It's money in the bank, and by that I mean it's probably gonna flutter.
Picked off in return for some sort of score. Yeah, you had the same analogy with corn once. You explained
to
me.
Yeah, it's also in the same same thing. And a grain silo is
where it's like I have too much corn. I can't use it all. I only need a little bit, so I'll give you 95% of it. And then you give me this IOU, and I can use that IOU to give to other people to buy shoes or whatever.
Except the difference there is it has a money-like quality in that people don't need the exact kernels of corn or grain that they
just some grain
saved.
When it's time. Yeah.
But those companies are not allowed to write more IOUs than what exists in their reserves.
Right. So they should be allowed to write IOUs, but not for extra.
Right. Exactly. They're not. Those would be considered 100% reserve requirement, which means they can't.
They would never be allowed to give out any loans.
A grain? No, that the bank, you mean?
Yeah.
No, that's what.
Because they couldn't give out.
No, so a bank, for example, you would, if you wanted to start a bank, and you had $1,000 and you said, "I'm going
to
start a bank."
Oh, you would need.
You
some
now
capital
have $1,000.
Okay.
You can make $1,000 in loans, and that's yours. And if somebody says. And if you do well and suddenly you, in through your interest and this and that, you now have $2,000, somebody else might say, you are doing an incredible job at managing risk, at making loans to appropriate
I'm gonna
lend,
give you this to
borrowers.
Best.
Here's $2,000 from me. You can go invest this on my behalf.
Yeah.
And then it's explicit. You're still acting as a in a bank capacity.
Right. Okay.
And you can go make those loans and you can grow
but
the
that's
business.
Different. That's
but
investing
that's
in the bank.
That's different than someone saying,
hold my money for me.
Right. Here's a couple $1,000. Hang on to this for me because.
And I'll give you $20.
Yeah. And I'll give you $20. Exactly. And then you say, you know what? I think I can make more. I can do well with this money that I've promised to return to this person.
Dude, this is what happens in business when something goes wrong. You know, you ever hear these stories of people who have access to the company funds?
Right.
And then they start using a little bit for themselves, and it gets more and more and more, and they just and then they're in trouble. Like, I can't pay back $1 million. Well, how did I steal this much?
Yep.
It's like you're giving them the chance to just go nuts with it.
It's legal.
Why?
It's explicitly legal.
Why? Who benefits from that? Why?
The banks.
Okay. And so what, do they lobby people to keep it legal?
Yeah.
They use their money that they're making from this.
Right. Because
influence.
Well, they also have, if they do go under and they do lose people's checking accounts, they have the FDIC. They have the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
They have a lot of different.
They have a lot of what?
They have a lot of places that are
little Brady.
Protecting them.
Yeah.
It's Bobby.
Bobby Brady?
No.
Did you consider naming him Bobby Brady?
No, some names were off. My wife, Marcia, did not like any of those.
I could see you saying, hey, how about Bobby? But no. Oh, right. I was joking then. So go on. Sorry. So the bank shouldn't be allowed. But so wait. Why is it legal? Why is it legal?
It is legal because the courts have always sided with the position that banks are financial intermediaries, and when they get money from customers, they can do with it what they want. To a limit.
So they say percentage of their funds.
Yeah, they are only allowed – they have to keep 10%.
Because if I were –
And they have to keep 10% in reserves. And what gets
– 10%?
10%.
That's not very much.
That's it. And what gets really confusing –
I see like 60-70%.
What gets really confusing is if they loan – so they take money from the balances and that have been deposited.
Yeah.
Then they loan it to somebody – who, for a certain period of time, isn't ready to proceed with his business, so he deposits it in the bank.
Really?
And now it's new deposits.
And they use that.
That they can then borrow 90% off. It just compounds.
And then when the guy's like, okay, I'm ready to use it,
Well, no, it's, I mean, it's, they just take it from someone else's deposit that they,
it just gets out of control.
It's the total, yeah.
So what's the stop?
Builds and builds.
Someone like me, some schmuck who doesn't know anything, just be like, I'm a bank now.
Oh, you have to get chartered.
You have to
submit to oversight from the Federal Reserve and the FDIC and the. You can't just call yourself a bank and get FDIC protection and become a primary dealer from the Federal Reserve and everything.
So that's the checks and balances. That's why they allow you to use 90% because, like, we've vetted who you are. We know that you're going to be good for this. Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so then they would say, what did it happen when all these banks got too big to fail stuff and they all failed?
Just what you said. They couldn't, well, they were.
They no longer met the standards the government had set up in the first place?
No. They started having all those loans called, and there it was much different because they were, well, they claimed it was liquidity issues. They didn't have the money to fund operations day to day because they were. They could no longer – they borrow from the Federal Reserve. They borrow from other banks on an overnight basis. They say we have this much in reserves. They have daily payments that they need to make, so they make overnight balances that they use their – even those 10% reserves as collateral. Right. But they – so what happened was the – well – what ended up happening was they created the Troubled Asset Relief Program and
the TARP. And that's to bail out these banks.
That was, they invested, quote unquote, it ranged from a few million to $25 billion was the most that anyone.
So it was the banks saying, like, hey, I need help starting my business. We're going to go to a bigger bank, the government, to.
Well,
they said,
we don't have enough. Money there. We have a lot of failed loans.
We screwed up.
We can no longer even come close to paying back all the money that we've borrowed. The issue was they would have gone bankrupt. All of them.
All of them would have.
Oh yeah, easily.
And then nobody would have had any money.
Well,
$250,000.
What they would have lost. It's questionable whether they would have had to eliminate. Whether they would have had to negotiate with people on how much they were getting back on their deposits. They certainly would have lost all of the stockholders' money.
Right.
Who cares? My mind. A lot of the bondholders' money. And then.
The bondholder is the same as stockholders?
They're still investors.
Yeah.
But they invest in banks. They're loaning money to banks. It's a lot of pension funds, a lot of. Very, very politically connected pension funds and a lot of...
What do you mean?
You know, like CalPERS and all the pension funds. They put their investments in... They buy bonds and a lot of them were in banks.
Okay.
So if those banks went out of business and the stockholders lost money, lost everything, and then the bondholders, if they had lost their money, now it spills down to the pension funds and their investments are... wiped out, perhaps.
Oh, wow.
Just
like if you invested in Enron, they gave you stocks.
Right.
20 years, and then you're like, oh, it's not worth anything anymore.
Right. Now, I would still... You can deal with the fallout afterwards. You can just make sure that the depositors, and but the other issue is that the those were still investors. They were still...
Who was still investors?
The pension funds.
Right.
They were still companies and people who voluntarily gave money to the banks in order to make a profit.
Wait, these are companies who gave their pension fund money to the bank?
Yeah, or like teachers' unions or whoever.
Okay, yeah.
Whoever it is. Just state employees.
Saying, hey, we're going to owe these people when they retire all this money.
Right.
Let's, so let's they leave have, it in the bank
they,
to save.
Right. So pension funds, they collect money from employees.
And that would have all been done?
Yeah, many of them.
You thought that was okay? Oh, no, you said investors.
Well, they are investors. Pension funds, as a whole, they are investors in the banks.
Yeah.
So it would have wiped out the people.
So that's what you would have been like, yeah, whatever.
Well, before, the choice is somebody had to lose money.
Yeah.
Somebody has to pay the bill for this. Do you make it the investors, the people who voluntarily, maybe the person who's working as a teacher and...
Everyone voluntarily gave their money to them.
But the difference is people who buy bonds or people who buy stock are giving the money in order to make a profit. They
are choosing to give the money for
a very different reason than the people who are depositing money so that they can live their daily lives and write checks and who think they can get their money out whenever they want. And the taxpayers,
yeah, that's a different thing.
The taxpayers who had nothing to do with Bank of America,
suddenly they had to pay.
Suddenly they're paying. And they got put in front of, and the same thing, you know, as you could say the same thing with, and it's not an easy decision because you...
Same thing with what?
Are all the banks going to go out? Is that something anyone is going to want on their head? Well, it's...
Wait, same thing as what? What were you saying?
Same thing as the car companies and, you know, General Motors. They did go through a bankruptcy.
But they weren't... If they went out of business...
But they got $50 billion from the American taxpayer.
But wait, if they went out of business, they just stopped making cars.
Well, the, what...
It didn't affect anyone who's not working there. They have to fire their employees, but the banks would too.
But it doesn't
affect anyone else who's not associated with Ford.
It affects a lot of people. Ford is a bad example because they're the one who did not need any money.
Oh, yeah.
But GM, for example, got $50 billion, a lot of it in loans, and most of it's been paid back. Much of it has been paid back.
Yeah.
But it still was a situation where they put the taxpayer in front of the unions who work for GM,
the
employers union.
Mean?
I mean, they went through a bankruptcy where the stockholders were nearly completely wiped out. And then they had a lot of creditors.
Yeah.
In a normal bankruptcy, you take the creditors down. They have to take losses to the point where the companies can function, so that you wipe out the debt of the company, and now it has assets greater than its debt, and then it can start up again. It's not the company, it didn't...
Right.
Not suggesting that you take GM and say that you need to strip everything down and sell it off, just that the creditors take the first loss. And we chose...
Because they invested in GM
and
or whatever.
And we as a country, as a government, chose to instead have the taxpayers...
I like
step
how
step in and give money and become new stockholders.
Now, hold on. When you say the taxpayers did it, they didn't raise our taxes in order for us to pay for it. They don't like everybody owes another 10 or 20 bucks. They just use their funds. The government used their funds.
Where does that come from?
Well, it came from us from before, though. It was already there.
No, it's all... Nothing is there. It's all running on... It's all funded by debt. Yeah.
So... But like when they say like we have to pay for it, it's like...
Well, down the line.
We already paid them. And then it's like you do whatever you want with the money. We have to pay you 35% of our income.
Yeah, but they're still making choices, and they're paying.
Okay, yeah, that's what I'm saying. We give the U.S. government money,
right?
Funds, whatever,
right?
And then we're not really paying to bail out the banks. We're not paying the fucking cops and teachers. We're just giving the money to the government, and then we're voting to see who. Where it all goes, pretty much. Like, if you get a congressman who wants to give more money to teachers and less money to, I don't know, whatever.
Right, but part of that is, part of what goes into their decision on where that money goes is the more they spend, the more someday we will have to pay back. The more we'll have to pay in interest because we've borrowed money to fund it. The more we've.
Oh, right. If the banks get that money, or let's say the auto companies get that money,
right,
and then say, we fucked up again, we can't pay you back. At that point, then then the U.S. government would say, oh, we're broke. Now we need to raise everybody's taxes to pay for shit.
Right. And right, exactly. And the way it stands right now is the U.S. now holds a huge stake in the stock of General Motors.
Uh-huh.
And the former creditors, the people who had been investors in GM,
yeah,
the people who bought bonds, they are still bondholders. So if we head to another bankruptcy, the U.S. government is in the first loss position.
Of not getting the money back.
Of not getting the money back. They will lose. The stock goes out first.
Yeah.
So we have put ourselves in a position.
So the U.S. government took a risk based on what? Saying these companies are too big. It's going to fuck us up too much. We're going to take a chance here.
Yeah. So and saying that it's, you know,
we're going to put everybody in danger and a little bit of just so that we think.
Yeah.
We want this company to go on.
Right.
Now, you told me right when the start, you were telling me that you're like, this is the natural order of things. A company goes up, they become successful, and then they go out of business, and you're just supposed to let that happen.
Well,
you're just supposed to let it happen when it happens.
Yeah, I'm not saying the decisions were right, or I'm just telling what the decisions were.
Right.
You know, if you have a small restaurant in town that has a great location and has every advantage, but it makes shitty food and it overpays its employees. If it goes out of business,
yeah,
would you require that the town's taxpayers chip in enough so that it can stay in business?
Yeah.
If you have an electronics store that has three locations in a state,
and you mess up and you hire an Armenian and he drives everyone away saying cash only.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it doesn't. You know, you can go through the progression of if it's a larger and larger company. Does it make any difference if a company sells products that nobody wants and overpays its employees and
if it ran it badly,
it's run badly and can't make money.
If you ask, they can't hear him. They'll barely hear him.
Okay,
so don't worry about it. But.
I would still say if it's a statewide company, the state should not step in and keep a badly run company going.
Yeah, if I have three employees, let's say, and somebody asks me for a raise, one of my employees, I have to really think about it and be like, well, I'm only bringing in this much money.
Right.
Yeah, I do like you. You're more valuable now because you've been here 3 years, so I would like to keep you and pay you more, but I have to decide whether or not this is fiscally responsible for me to do.
Right.
But if I just say, fuck it, raise. Who else? You guys all want one? Oh, yeah. I'll get a raise. Like, yeah, I'll lose my business.
Right. It engenders what's called moral hazard.
What?
It engenders moral hazard, which means that, you know, a bank or General Motors or a large company can take a huge risk, and it's a heads I win, tails you lose situation.
Because they're like,
the incentive, we're backed by them. The incentive is suddenly, well, why not take this risk?
This is like,
why not?
This is like throwing a Hail Mary when you see an offsides flag.
Yeah.
You're like, what's going to happen? Either we catch it or it's incomplete. We get 10 yards anyway.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's embarrassing and you'll.
And it's almost like there's no reason to run it right now. If I see an offsides flag, like, don't just hand it off for a 3 yard gain. That's silly.
Yeah.
We already have that beat.
Right. Right.
Fucking Cowboys. So then what was your feeling about the tarp when it was happening?
Well, it's.
What? You should have another one? Where did this kid come from? What's this kid? Who is that one?
Hey, guys. Can you go outside for a little bit?
Where did you come from? Who are you? Is that neighbor. You just got a friend?
Neighbor kid.
Wow. Man, I wish I could make friends like that. Meet somebody randomly, like, hey, let's play.
Yeah, he invites everyone he meets over to the house.
Really?
Yeah.
You're like, no, he's like, this person is a homeless. We don't have him into our homes. Yeah. We don't look them in the eye.
Yeah. We get a knock at the door, and he runs to the door, opens it, and says, hi, what's your name?
Surprised that he learned my name. You just told him once.
Yep. Yeah, he's good with names.
It's like 20
Not like
minutes
me.
Later.
I'm terrible with names, and he's got it.
If you tell me immediately, like, this is Bob, I'd be like, hi, nice to meet you, and then if, like, someone else says, this is Tony, I'm like, oh, nice to meet you. I'm like, what was the first guy's name again? I'm like, oh, it's a good question, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so what was your feeling on all this, on the bailout stuff? Doesn't it do that? Hold on, sorry, before I get to that. Doesn't it, when the taxpayers pay, technically, they're not going to see me throw quotation marks up in my hand, but like,
yeah.
When taxpayers pay, really all it does is devalues the amount that each of our dollars is worth, right?
Well, no. So that would be, so the way I would, to use another analogy, if you have... If you have someone counterfeiting money in Iowa, and he's making $100 bills that are pristine, they are perfect, they will never, ever be recognized as fake.
Right.
Clearly, he benefits. If he goes out and buys, he makes $100,000 of it.
Per thing he uses.
He makes a couple $100,000 of it. He goes out and buys a Ferrari.
Yeah.
He obviously benefits. Yeah. He now has a Ferrari.
Ferrari dealership.
The Ferrari dealership benefits. Hugely, because he's just sold a car. Maybe he makes a $40,000 profit on it.
Yeah, great.
Now, the stores that Ferrari dealer, they benefit.
The store what?
The stores that dealer goes to, that he buys things from.
Buy tires or whatever.
Or just goes out to dinner. Takes his wife to a nice dinner.
Okay, those big stores, mistake. Got to treat her badly, otherwise she'll get uppity. Yeah.
Those stores are benefiting.
Yeah.
And it trickles down slowly, and
to everyone,
for a couple $100,000, it's not going to impact the general prices of goods everywhere. But it does a little bit. It starts to dilute the value of dollars nationwide, because prices rise in response. Because
if you add let's say 1% of let's say there's $100,000 out there in the world,
right.
And you make a fake $1,000.
Yep.
So now there's 101,000.
Yeah.
But it's only worth 100,000.
Right.
So everybody's stuff is worth 99 point something.
Right. And you would expect that now the way people would value their money, the amount they would pay for goods and services, the price they would pay would go up by 1%.
Right.
But it's not that everyone's level rises at the same time. There is a progression of how it works its way through with, like we're just saying, the people, the guy who made the money benefits the most.
Then the guy
then
who owns
the
restaurant.
First transaction, then slowly through. And the people who get hurt by it are the people who are at the end of the chain. So who wouldn't see it. They would just see the price rise.
Why would the price rise?
Because with new money in the system, like you just said.
The value of it.
The value of everything. Oh, their money goes down. If
the counterfeiter doesn't suffer at all.
Right.
Do you think the counterfeiters are like... Fucking, I just counted $100,000 and it's worth like $98,000.
I don't think they're worried about that.
Okay.
But it's the same situation going back to what you were just talking about. When new money is created by the Federal Reserve.
Because they say we suddenly need more money.
Right.
They're just counterfeiting.
It's not that everybody's money goes up by that percent. You don't see it uniformly. It goes to the first recipients.
It goes to the first?
The first recipients of the money. So it goes to the big banks first. They're the Ferrari dealers in this analogy. The big banks who get the money, who transact directly with the Federal Reserve, are the first ones who see that benefit.
Okay.
And then it goes to the bank's customers.
Oh, because the U.S. is just counterfeiting money.
Right.
They're just counterfeiting money.
It's a situation where it's legal. But it's no different.
But it's dumb. Just because it's legal doesn't mean it's a smart...
Right. Like, you're increasing the money supply without actually increasing wealth. You're not doing anything productive. You're not helping people by increasing the money supply. You're helping the people that are first in the chain how it flows through. And you're hurting everyone who is
everyone
not
else.
In the front of that line.
Okay, so now, hold on. Now, if the counterfeiter / U.S. government... gets that money back. So, okay, we're going to print up a bunch of money. If that counterfeiter, let's just say, somebody gave him $100,000 real dollars, and he said, cool, I'm going to burn this now, so we're back to even.
That would be...
So if the government gets...
Well, it would
undo it. If the government gets paid back, they're like, cool, now we're okay.
It wouldn't undo it. Because, again, that would be fine if everyone's benefit was exactly the same and uniformly across the country. But because the counterfeiter, if he's getting... It depends... If he's getting $100,000 back from actual work and from actual income and
everything else,
and then he burns it, now he's hurting himself, but he still has...
He has $100,000
that he has still before. Changed who has benefited from this full cycle.
Yeah, so it wouldn't even out completely. because then the fucking Ferrari dealership would have this extra money.
Right.
And he goes, he burned it, but he goes, but they're like in the business.
And they're the big banks.
No, 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 hold on. But the Ferrari dealership, they got a fake whatever.
But again, it's we're saying they're perfect. They're real. They're dollars. He just it was just made by some guy yeah. in his garage.
But when he burned the other money, it's as if he just given them the real money. So they benefit based on what they should have benefited. Making sense or am I losing you?
No, because he might not have done the same thing. It's if he had no money, he would never have bought the Ferrari.
Right. But then he got real money. So it's saying, like, I proactively bought this Ferrari with real money. I just used fake money to give it to you. But then I got this real money. If the U.S. government gets paid back, if they get paid back by the banks and the whatever, then isn't it really no harm, no foul?
Well, this is... yeah, and the banks have paid back the TARP, but again, that's different than creating money. They were using... There's a I'm distinguishing between the TARP and the Federal Reserve. Federal Reserve is creating money. The TARP was... Those were investments from actual money from collected by taxes and...
Right.
Well, borrowed. But...
Federal Reserve...
That's expense. Above board.
Okay.
It's not... They weren't creating money to... Well, the Fed also creates money and loans it. "Quote unquote," loans it to the banks, but the TARP was not from the Federal Reserve. That was from the Treasury.
Why do we have a Federal Reserve? Because I've learned about this recently. Why do we even have it?
Why do we have it?
Yeah. Isn't it an independent company that we really don't have control over? They just control our currency.
Well, we control
the spokesman.
The head of the board. Bernanke.
Just the public spokesman, we pay yeah, him.
Right, but we can't really control much of what they do.
And even if he says, like, we're putting up, but you say, hey, don't, he'll be like, well, they told me to tell you that they are anyway.
Right.
What's the fucking Federal Reserve? What the fuck is that? What company is that? Who is that?
It's they're the overseers of the banks.
Who's Bernanke's boss?
Well, Bernanke still has to report to Congress. They can...
What can they do to him? Arrest him?
Not arrest him. They can, well, they can make his life hell, but they can, no, they can force him to step down.
So
but they would just appoint a new chair. It doesn't matter who it is.
This is like, I don't know how much you remember from when we were growing up. I don't know how much they taught or whatever, but like when the Romans took over Israel at some point, they decided they wanted to keep the temple going.
Mm-hmm.
They just felt like, let them have their religion. We'll just keep it going, but we'll rule everybody. But they would decide who the high priest was. But the problem was, like, if you were supposed to go into, like, the inner sanctuary, if you're not the actual high priest, you just die.
Right.
So they would just kill one off every year. And Yom Kippur, when he would go in there, and be like, no, you can't do that. So, but it's like, they'll just appoint a new one.
Right.
But it's like, it's still the Romans who are running shit.
Right.
You can kill them all you want. We'll just make more fucking
more
high priests. So, yeah, so Ben Bernanke doesn't do it. He's just newsletter.
Well, in theory, what they are supposed to be doing is providing liquidity when banks do have, if they did have a run on a bank and they didn't have the cash on hand to meet the demands.
Then the Federal Reserve is like,
Federal Reserve
we got you covered
is supposed
for a second.
To be there to fill in those gaps. They have, they also set interest rates, which is a puzzling thing. They decide what the interbank lending rate should be.
Interbank,
like what banks lend to each other at. It would be like if a panel of a handful of appointed people decided what the price of orange juice should be, what people should be paying for.
And you're like, no, we'll pay based on supply and demand.
Exactly.
It just sets naturally.
But that doesn't happen with interest rates, with short-term overnight rates.
Because there's no supply and demand for interest rates?
No, of course there is.
There
it's
is.
Just,
people
yeah.
need like
right,
when
right.
less people buy homes, less people need interest rates. Less
right,
people are even concerned with it.
The Federal Reserve is supposedly able to control
adjust
the fluctuations
that.
In the economy by keeping interest rates steadier than they otherwise would be. And again, I am no fan of it. I'm not defending it.
Right.
That's just what...
Well, like, it used to be interest rates would just go up and down randomly, and then like, oh, interest rates are low, better hurry and buy a house before they go back up again.
Well, this is overnight rates. They set what banks loan to each other for overnight loans. It's not mortgages. It's not...
Why do banks loan to each other?
Because they need to meet reserve requirements. They need to meet those... They need to have enough cash on hand.
Oh, hey, we're short.
Right. So they will do... they will have overnight transactions.
They say, hey,
here's...
Bank. We're a bank, too. Can you just give us the money?
Here, we have this as collateral. They're long-term loans, but we're required by law to have this amount of cash on hand. So will you give us the cash for overnight
Just so we can keep that much money on hand.
Yeah, exactly.
Overnight. And then they give them back the next day?
Yeah.
How? Where do they get money back from?
Oh, it's not actual money. It's just
funds.
Digitally.
Whatever. And then they call in some investments?
Yeah.
And then give them money back?
There's no
It's like paying off one credit card with another.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you still owe the money.
Yeah.
Man. How much of this do you know? Didn't the, when they had the TARP?
Yeah.
And the bailouts. Bailouts is the TARP?
Well, I think a lot of people say them synonymously. The TARP was a specific program. It involved a bunch of different pieces. There was the bailouts to the banks themselves called the Capital Purchase Program. There was another extra piece given specifically to Bank of America and Citigroup. There was another piece that went, there was money set aside for homeowners, for mortgage servicers to give homeowners breaks on if they couldn't afford their mortgage, they had to meet certain criteria, they would get money. It was also the autos was part of TARP. AIG bailout was part of TARP.
They bailed out AIG? Wait, which one's AIG?
AIG was the insurance company that...
That's the one that's against Live Nation. Is that AEG?
I don't know.
What's the other? Oh, whatever.
I don't think they're the same.
Probably not. Okay. I'm trying to wrap my head around. Oh, this is a good question. Didn't when they gave this money... They printed up this money. The Federal Reserve said, okay, we're going to give whatever, the bailout, whatever. Didn't the Federal Reserve say, okay, yeah, we're also just going to take a couple trillion for ourselves?
I don't know enough about how the Federal Reserve,
operates.
They classified it.
Why do we have a Federal Reserve?
But again,
Reserve?
The TARP didn't come from the Federal Reserve.
Why do we have a Federal Reserve?
To provide liquidity to the banks in case they
Reserve. The Federal Reserve?
That was...
Why isn't it just a bank's fucking bailout fund that they pay into every year? They give liquidity that way.
Well, the FDIC is there for that. Therefore, if
so why do we need the Fed?
I don't think we do, but...
Who runs the Fed? It's not Ben Bernanke.
Well, they have a board of governors, and they have...
Who is this? What company is this? Who are they? Where do they come from?
Non-governmental... It's non-governmental government.
It's like the Borg.
The Borg?
Yeah.
What's the Borg?
You should have got more into sci-fi. You're a nerd. You should have been into it more. It's in Star Trek Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. It's just this...
How did I end up getting called a nerd?
I was going to call you an idiot, but... no, you should be more of a nerd. You should have been watching this stuff instead of just studying math like an idiot. Yeah, they all sort of became this thing, and they were like, oh, whatever, I'm not going to explain it.
But that was also, I mean, there was the, like, I'm clearly no fan of the banks or the Federal Reserve, but I have no idea what Occupy Wall Street wanted or what they were about. It seemed like
they were too fractured. Here's what they wanted. They wanted the end of the reserve or something along those lines, but they really just wanted transparency.
It seemed like there were
tell us
some
what they're doing.
People who wanted that. There were some people who wanted
over the government.
Who wanted their student loans undone. There were so many different things, and so
the problem
disparate
is they really needed some leadership or a spokesman or something.
Yeah,
but it was just like of the people,
right?
Sort of situations, and then it's like, well, the people want lots of different things.
Yeah,
and like we're the 99 cent, but like South Park did a good episode about this, where it's like, but the 99% is made up of 20% of the people who want that, 18% of the people want this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know. I walked by them when they were here in D.C. for a while, but it seemed like it was just people having sex in tents and shitting
buckets. Yeah, then it became a lot of that, too.
I don't even know what... And, you know, when I drove by, obviously after I rolled the windows up and turned the AC on recirculate...
because they stunk so bad.
Oh, yeah.
Did it smell?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wow. It's horrible. I would see one sign that said, end the Fed. There was another sign that said, I don't know. I couldn't understand what the movement was trying to do.
Yeah. I think it was mostly transparency. I think that really was a lot of it. Just tell us what you're doing.
It's ironic that a movement that we have no idea what they were for was for transparency.
Yeah. I asked for a while on Twitter and a bunch of other places, like, can someone please tell me what they want? And everyone's like, why are you against them? And I was like, I just want to know what they want. Right, like, you're an idiot. I'm like, they're really not explaining what I want. It was like a month of me asking.
Right.
And going back before somebody explained to me, I was like, here is their mission statements. I was like, oh, okay, great. But they definitely need to do a better job getting the word out because no one knew.
Yeah.
Everyone knew whether to just support them or not. What time is my show tonight? I hope it's not 7, is it? I'm just trying to check real quick.
All right.
Okay, so I'll check in a second. Let's get back to it. So you're against TARP and the bailouts. Or were you?
I don't know. I've gone both. I think...
What are the pros and cons? Do that way.
Well, the pros were... It certainly saved... It saved the... It saved the banks from all collapsing. They all would have collapsed. Now, I don't know. It seems like the people who brought on the mess would have been the ones most hurt. And I wouldn't have lost any sleep over that. And as long as they refunded all the people who were the, you know, the depositors, like I said before, then the people who had no interest, who were not investors.
Right.
All the investors could lose every penny, as far as I'm concerned. It seemed like what we did
was... Why? Because they knew the risk, and they were like, yeah, you took risk, and sorry.
Right, right. They chose... There's a difference between people giving the money to the bank because they want to make a profit from it and giving to the bank for safekeeping.
Right. Yeah, exactly. We're doing a podcast. Nothing crazy. wait, what was I just saying?
So the way I would what they did was the equivalent of if I emptied out your bank account, took it to Vegas, does it matter if I won or lost?
No. Well, you just shouldn't have risked it.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be nice if you won so you can give me the money back as opposed to not being able to give me the money back.
You know, I think they
ran their company badly.
They did it because it was going to be very chaotic. It was going to be tumultuous. The stock market would have crashed. Again,
that's what you said. That's a natural order of things. The stock market goes up and down. The longer you try to hold it back from crashing, it's just going to crash worse.
Yeah. And I mean, talk about a one-time thing to knock down the 1%. That would have been...
What do you mean?
To those, it would have been... The people who would have been most hurt are the people with the most money.
Yeah.
And, you know, anyone who now claims to be working for the 99%, but who fully supported the bailouts and the TARP.
Yeah.
It's a little...
Because you're bailing out the rich people.
Yeah.
Wow. Because they would have had enough money to pay back the investment.
And it was done under Bush. Obama supported it. I'm sure whoever would have been in power would have supported it. If Romney had been in the government, he would have supported it. There's no question. They all would
you
have.
Just got to
they
do
all,
something.
They were, you know, it was voted in by both parties. Very bipartisan.
Oh, really?
Very bipartisan. Certainly, there were the Ron Pauls and the few people who
were saying,
who were speaking out strongly against it. Not even, not even like a, I don't know. It was a, this is nuts.
Yeah, what are we doing?
Yeah, he was, you know, that's his thing.
What's that side? That what are we doing? Like, why should we even?
That side is, this is not a thing to be doing with taxpayers' money.
We're reinvesting our taxpayers' money in a failing business.
Right. Yep, we are taking money.
In a business
that's
shown it's sucky.
Yep, we're taking...
It's not like bailing out the farmers when you're like, hey, we had a drought. Something that we couldn't believe. We got to help these farmers stay in business.
Right.
Because it was an unbelievable whatever, a bad... Whatever happened.
Yeah.
Something bad happened. It's just bankers who are running a business, who are running a company.
Yeah. And there's, you know, their side is there are a lot of people who work for the banks, there are a lot of people who work for the auto companies and who make parts for the auto companies. And if you lose all those jobs, it would have been chaos.
So then
it would have been a terrible situation.
And that's the too big to fail situation.
Yes.
But then they're right back. They're still right back there now.
And that's the moral hazard.
They're back right where they were. They're already back. They're too big to fail again.
Yeah. Oh, they never got smaller. They have a higher percentage now of deposits than they did before. The major banks.
So that if they do need to get bailed out again and we can't do it, they'll make sure to pay more people off before they go out of business.
Yeah. Yeah, and I used to work at a bank.
Yeah.
And we had...
Next, please. Is that your job?
Not that...
Sir, next, please.
Not that kind of bank.
Oh.
There was one guy. Not to refer to him by name.
Just tell me his address.
I'll call him Brian.
Okay.
He was about to be made a senior researcher. He was writing research on companies, and he was doing it on financial services companies.
Yeah.
And they were mostly the mortgage lenders and companies that dealt with mortgages. And he was really good at his job as an understudy. And when it was his turn to be promoted to be senior, he presented to the powers that be 7 companies that he wanted to launch coverage on.
Launch
coverage meaning he wants to be the senior name. I worked for a large bank and we did a lot of research on other companies. We wrote, you hear like analysts say this stock is a buy or this stock is a hold. So that's what he was doing. And he did research on 7 companies, did the models, did everything, all the work on them. And his presentation was, this was in 2007 when everything was going swimmingly.
Yeah.
He wanted to do 5 sells and 2 holds of the 7 companies. And in the banks, among research, they are probably 65% buy, 34% hold, and 1% sell. You don't go out with 5 of 7 sells. It's not done.
It's two. What does that mean? You have to have.
He said that they were not worth the stock they were trading at.
Oh, I get it.
And his argument was.
So he's like, get rid of this because it's undervalued. It's not.
He said,
worth
he, what, yeah, what he, is, it's what advice to the bank's clients, to the people who buy
you
the research.
Oh, that's it.
You should get out. And not only should you get out, but you should short sell it. You should
get out immediately.
Bet against it. But no, bet against it. Short sell means that you are betting against how the stock fares.
How does that work?
You borrow shares from someone who holds them, and then you sell those. And then the hope is that when you go to repurchase them at a later date,
they're worth so little,
they're worth
only
less.
Pay. Yeah.
So you're buying them at less, and then you return the shares that you borrowed from someone else.
Right.
It's a convoluted
5x5 shares, and you're at $100 a piece.
Right.
And then... down to $10. I'm like, okay,
yeah,
I already sold my $500.
Right.
Here's
but
your
you
50
still
bucks
owe
back.
Somebody those shares. No, you owe them the shares. So you have to buy them back.
Yeah, but
hopefully
they're worth $10.
At a low price. Right.
So
you
now
buy them back at the low
price. I'm pocketing $450.
Exactly.
Oh, that's what sells. And so everyone's like, no, fuck you. We're not doing it that way. We like to buy.
He was gone from the company within a month.
Did you read that book, Quiet, that you gave your dad?
Yeah.
You read it. That's what they said. Did you remember that part? They said, this is the problem, was that with introverts and extroverts, is all these introverts were saying, actually, guys, the safe route here is to go ahead and sell this stuff. And these other guys like, how about we make millions? Who wants to be on my team?
Well, he had 2 things working against him. One, he was an introvert, but also
he had
a southern accent.
And, really?
And I hate to say it.
They just sound dumber.
It was New Yorkers who were making his decisions. He had to go, and he's selling himself as much as he's selling his ideas.
And they're like, we don't want this down-home Alabama
and he was,
again,
he
knowledge
was,
you have.
He was smart. He knew what he was doing. And these companies, 4 of the 5 of them,
dismissed them.
Were gone. Were bankrupt.
Really?
Within a year. This was in the end of 2007.
So totally dead on.
Gone. Yeah. He nailed it.
What about the 2 holds?
He was working somewhere else.
What about the 2 holds?
They did poorly also.
Okay.
I mean, the whole sector was a disaster. And he just picked 2 holds because they were... in his mind, better than the other 5.
Right. So you got to hold something, hold
right.
these 2.
Yeah.
Wow. And so they all just ignored those people, that's how he got in trouble.
He was out. He was forced out because they said, you can't do this. Like, we do business with these companies. So the research side is separate from the banking side, the investment banking side.
Right.
The investment bankers and the sales force, when those companies need to raise money, they will call the bankers and the sales guys, and they say, the sales guys will then go to the bank's clients, our clients, and say, look, this company's looking to raise another $100 million in equity. Are you in on this deal? Here's the price. And they will say, looks good. What does your research side,
right.
what do they say about this company?
Yeah.
And it is independent. The bankers are not allowed to influence.
Oh.
Even then, this... changed in the past 15 years.
Now they're allowed to influence?
No. It's changed to
this
way.
They're not allowed to
influence. Yeah.
Okay.
It had already changed before this.
Okay.
Before 2007.
And so they just didn't take the advice.
It used to be that the bankers had influence, and the bonuses of the research side were tied to how the investment banking business was. And if research, they were really reluctant then to have a sell rating on a company because the company wouldn't go to our bank's sales guys and investment bankers if research says they're a sell, because they know that the sales guys aren't going to be able to sell it to clients.
Because they say, what does the research say? They say we don't want you.
Yeah. They say you're a shitty company.
And so they say, okay, we'll go to a different bank who won't tell us that.
Yeah. So.
Until they're just like.
And he wasn't.
Just a glass tiger. So he wasn't, want to become the glass tiger.
This analyst wasn't fired because of his views specifically, but he was told maybe he was being too pessimistic.
So he was influenced.
He was told, well, he...
But not by the bank.
He was told, but he couldn't launch, he couldn't be a senior analyst. He couldn't get the promotion. They couldn't publish the coverage he had prepared because he was being too pessimistic. Now, maybe it was an honest difference of opinion. It was. Yeah. The stock market was doing very well.
It is some guessing.
People, right, it is some guessing. Things were going very well. They had...
Like, what are you
talking about?
He had
high expectations for what the market would look like in the next however long.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is he was out quickly.
Yeah. That's the thing with risk when people say, like, it's a, okay, it's a, you know, there's a 70% chance you will double your, let's just say, your investment in 10 years. There's a 25% chance it'll stay even or raise you 5% in the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. There's a 5% chance you'll lose it all. And then when people lose it all, they're like, well, we didn't know.
Yeah.
We didn't know we would lose it all.
You said it wouldn't happen.
You're like, no, I said,
yeah, you
said it one in 20 times this will happen.
No, you said it wouldn't happen.
People are like, don't read. They're like, 95%. It's 100% win. You're like, no, you have to see what the negatives are too. If there's a 95% chance I'm going to make a penny and a 5% chance I'm going to die, then it's not worth the risk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they just don't listen to those people. And they're just like, all right, we'll go somewhere else. Well, that's a problem too then.
Yeah.
It's good they're not allowed to have influence on them, but they still do.
But yeah, they can't
directly.
Yeah, and they're not even allowed to like be in the same room.
Oh, really? It's supposed to be independent, but they have to pay for it.
Who has to pay for it?
The banks foot the bill for their researchers.
Yeah. Like the bank as a whole, right?
You'd have to have a rule they wouldn't influence, otherwise they definitely would influence. Like say this is a good this is good.
They added the rule after post Enron because those guys were making money hand over fist because they just kept a buy rating on Enron and the investment banker. And the Enron kept raising more and more and more money.
And people were investing more and more because everyone was like, buy.
Yeah, right.
And then they're like, we're worth nothing.
Yeah.
And they sold it all.
Right.
And then.
Right.
Got it. And they made pennies on the dollar. People invested.
Yeah, if even that. I mean.
It was just nothing.
Yeah. The stock was what.
I mean, there's a couple of phrases you taught me that I really like.
From there?
From this invest, yeah. One was dead cat bounce.
Yeah.
That I like a lot. Which is like, let's say, an Enron stock.
Yeah, if a stock is going down, and it's going down and down and down, if it then suddenly swings up 10%.
Yeah. Everyone was like, oh,
this
we're back.
There's one group of people who always say, it's back. And the people who say, it's just a dead cat bounce means...
You throw a cat off a building.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not up.
It's not going anywhere.
It's just
a bounce.
It's such a graphic term.
Yeah. And the other, picking up change in front of a bulldozer.
I haven't heard that one.
That's for, and actually that was the business model of the companies that this guy wanted to go out with sell ratings on is referred to as picking up change in front of a bulldozer.
So like that 95% chance
making a tiny amount.
Boom.
But you know at some point
the hammer's
you're
gonna fall.
Going to get hit.
Yeah.
And that's what they were, and that's what he said more imminent than what most people realized.
Yeah. I was in Indianapolis with Tom Segura, and there's this mall near where they put us up for crackers, and it's a 5-minute walk but there's a you have to cross like a major street, like a 4-lane, not quite a highway, and there's no like crossing lane. So you have to like or whatever.
Yeah.
So you have to like really look to see if cars are coming and wait for your chance. And so we saw a wide opening, I was like, all right, let's go. We were walking briskly across the street, but still walking, not running. And I saw a quarter. on the ground.
That is very literal.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Tom kept walking a little bit. I was like, let me get this quarter. And you know how like you try to pick up a fumble and you start to pick it up and start to move, but then you're like, oh, I didn't grasp it hard enough. So you have to go back. So I thought I picked up the quarter, started moving, then realized I didn't hold it. So I had to go back for it. And these cars kept coming. And then I had to do that twice. And the cars kept coming more and more. And then Tom was just laughing. He's like, if a Jew dies trying to pick up a quarter, it's just, I'm just going to love talking at your funeral.
Yeah. Is that a Hall of Fame entry? What would you call that?
And he got the quarter.
Yeah. On the epitaph, it was worth it.
No, investors.
On the tombstone, there's a hand coming out of the ground, still grasping that quarter.
What is that? A pickup change in front of a bulldozer?
Picking up change in front of it's making a small amount.
Yeah.
When it's just not going to work forever.
Wow. The other one you taught me that I really liked when I was looking for a house, like a while ago, was like never try to catch a falling knife.
Yeah.
Because the prices of homes started coming down a little bit.
Right.
And everyone's like, you better hurry up. We're finally down 10%.
Right.
And you were always
like,
wait.
What's the risk in missing the first 3% on the way back up?
I remember this in 2007 and 2008, right when it started like going down. People were like, oh, the housing. And in LA, I mean, the bubble was humongous.
Yeah.
It was so overpriced. People were like, we got to buy now or it's going to be double in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it started deflating and stuff. Like a year, and people are like, okay, it's time. Let's buy now because we're cheaper. And you're like, just wait. Because in early 2008, you said, I guarantee you, minimum, people are saying late 2011. Everyone's like, you're crazy. It'd be a year tops. And you were like, that's the reports I hear, and that's what I like. So I kept telling people that. I'm like, I think I'm going to wait until at least 2011.
And have you bought a house yet?
No.
Good.
Yeah. And it's worth even less now. Right. Even since 2011. It's still come down more. Also, yeah.
Right, good for you.
Thanks. So I realized I didn't have enough money. I was trying to just go for a house just because I was supposed to.
Right.
And I was
There is a
have some savings.
There is a herd mentality and lemming mentality.
Yeah, just all fall off the cliff together. So what has to be fixed with the banks? Do you have to go soon?
Yeah.
Is that what that?
Yeah.
Look, wife was.
Yeah, I gotta go in 5 minutes.
Sorry. Okay. So what should they do to fix it?
Well, I don't know. I really don't know. It's kind of, I would say a system where the 100% reserves are in place, where
you can't touch
checking accounts cannot be touched, savings accounts.
But then you wouldn't be able to give people interest on those things,
right? Oh yeah, it would flip, and people would be pissed off about it.
And that's how they make money. They make money on ATMs. They should. Because
they're
offering
make money
you 7-Eleven access to your cash.
Exactly.
At midnight.
If you don't,
give us $2.
If you don't like it, carry your life savings on you at all times.
That's what I do. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. Edit this part out. Yeah.
And savings accounts, they can, as long as it is explicit that people know that money is going to be invested in things that can lose value.
Right.
And I don't think people know that.
I mean, they say it's federally insured up to $100,000, up to $250,000. You're really only insured by the federal government, and that you're betting on too.
Right. And I would also say if checking accounts are 100% reserved, you don't need the FDIC. You don't need it anymore. There is no reason for it, because if they do take that money, now you're talking prison. Now you're talking, that is just straight up theft.
Would the FDIC do? Nothing.
Nothing.
To advise them. It wouldn't be able to enforce her.
They wouldn't need the insurance. It's the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. It's deposit insurance. You don't need insurance on your deposits if they are expressly forbidden from taking risk with it.
Right.
And banks would...
What would they do with it? Just hold it, like in vaults? I mean, or just hold the numbers that represent the cash in vaults?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? But then, okay, so here's my money. I'm asking to hold $100.
And I want to be able to make electronic payments. When I want to pay my bills, I want to go online and do it. And that's a service that they provide.
Right. So that's what I would pay for.
Yeah. And you would pay for the protection that...
So why do they give you interest and stuff?
Because they're taking it and they're making loans with it.
Because we can make 12% on this.
Right.
I'll give you 1%.
Yeah.
Go think you're winning.
Right. And if the loans that I'm making with the money you think you have in safekeeping fails, it doesn't matter because we have the FDIC.
Are there banks that do that? That say, yes, we will 100% not spend your money?
No.
There's no banks that do that.
Can't compete.
And they can't say, we're going to make you 100% safe. You will not ever lose a dollar.
I don't think they would be able to compete. Is that a mess? I mean, don't you already expect that?
Yeah, I do.
Would that sell? I mean, it's not a sales
point. You
have
to lose all faith in the bank system before that.
Yeah. And if they do have the charter to be a bank, they have to pay to the FDIC anyway.
Yeah.
they have to pay for the insurance in order to qualify to be a bank.
Oh, so they're already out money.
Yeah.
What does FDIC stand for?
Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation.
So it's not the Fed?
It's not the Fed, no.
It's just another...
It's another agency, yeah.
That all the banks hire.
Yeah.
That's confusing as fuck.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So it's just going to happen again, though.
Oh, yeah.
It's just every few years,
yeah.
It'll just happen.
Yeah.
And then we're going to bail them out again because they're like, you're too big, you're too many employees.
Right.
And too many rich people would lose their money yeah. and their second mansion.
Yeah. You can count on it.
Man, people don't like rich people.
Well.
But they still do everything they say.
Yeah.
It's like hot chicks. You're a horrible person, but yeah, sure. You're neurotic. I'll give you a ride.
All right, we have to go. Oh, that is not the way I was going. But,
all right. Well, thanks, Tom. Anything else you want to share about this stuff?
No, I think that's. I mean,
man, it's confusing as fuck.
It is. It's not. And it's. It, and it, it's not. It gets more and more and more complicated with they have so many off balance sheet holdings, they have so many derivatives.
Off balance sheet holdings?
Yeah, derivatives and it's
they definitely need rules. They need an oversight committee.
They have it, but they're smarter than the people who are overseeing them.
It's like cops.
Yeah. Are you saying we're cops are smarter or less smart?
Less smart. It's oh. Like they're not trained well enough to like do stuff. We were all doing mushrooms in some yeah. park recently and some forest ranger came by who was like he just couldn't see the signs. That we're all on mushrooms. And it's like he wasn't trained properly.
Yeah.
If he was, he would have been like, oh, you guys, you're doing something illegal. I can see it. But yeah. Luckily, they're just the people doing the stuff are smarter about it than the people who are doing it. All right. Yeah. Well, cool. Yeah, well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fun.
Yeah, no problem. What should people invest in if they had to invest in something right now?
Gold and precious metals.
Okay. And Hershey's.
And Hershey's.
All right, thanks. My soul, you load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one. Boom! That's it. That's the episode, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it. Tom was upset that it'd be boring, but I didn't think it was. I thought it was interesting. He knows a lot about that shit. It's so complicated. The whole deal is just fucking complicated. Why did that one black-haired girl on How I Met Your Mother, why is she on there? She's like the worst part of that show. She's really boring. All right, don't forget my storyteller show. My next one about the holidays is December 18th. Tickets are just $5. Ooh, that's 2 weeks away. Tickets are just $5. Me, Kyle Kinane, and I still got to invite four of the people. And then in January, I said I'm in Edmonton, and in February, wow, nothing on the schedule yet. But in March, I've got Long Island, and I've got Vancouver. Check out my website, arithegreat.com, for everything. And again, don't forget, go through Amazon. Go through my website for Amazon. If you're doing shopping, it would really help me out. I'm not asking for free money. Just do your regular shopping, and then Amazon will pay me because of that. And Pro Flowers and whatever else. And t-shirts and shit from my website. Thank you, everybody. That's the way to support this podcast. So, on behalf of all our Marines and our... I don't know. That's it. That's the episode, you guys. Thank you for tuning in. Episode 90. Banks Suck. With Tom Brady. Over and out. Yeah, I say, boy, you gotta get getting, yeah. Gotta get you one more ring. Joe Montana remains king. Yeah, I hope Tom Brady wins one more Super